Hello and welcome to another episode of the world's greatest online magazine presents the Half Baked Podcast. There's many things going on, so we're gonna have to skip all of the sandwich talking points we had this week, I'm afraid, and we're gonna have to circle back to them next time. Also, we're a little bit shorthanded today. DG and Nimbish are both out with hamstring and groin injuries, respectively. So. It's just going to be me.
DG is pulling a Rudy Gobert.
It's just going to be me and DK today.
What's up, everybody?
Obviously, we have a multitude of issues we can get to, so there's going to be no shortage of things to talk about. And actually, a quick bit of housekeeping. Let's have a quick WGOM fantasy update.
Hey, there, friends. I think you know it's fantasy time again. It's time to follow all those stats and figure out who got the most at-bats.
All right, the champion of the baseball league was Ben. Congratulations to Ben. We have Uncle Walt coming in second place, and it looks like a Hungry Joe came in third. Oh, good job, Joe.
That guy is good at fantasy. Yep.
Yeah, let me tell you. You should see his trophy case. Wait. I do have one more note here. Let's see, where is that? It's the writing is small. Last place went to Pete's quality team. High quality. All right. A bit of a special case in our football leagues this year due to the situation in the Bills-Bengals game. For the A-League, we are going to declare co-champions, and that'll be between Texas Twins fan, nay, SoCal Twins fan, and his co-champion is Uncle Walt. And the third place game, the championship game, it was enough up in the air where you can easily justify that, you know, that should be declared co-champions. The third place game in the A-League, I think we can safely call that one. And the third place winner is, looks like it says Hungry Joe again. Awesome. In the B-League, once again, in the championship game, same situation. It was ambiguous enough that we're going to declare co-champions. And that is B. Higgum and KG2005. And also in this league, the third place game is, you know, safe enough to call it. So the third place winner is the German. And that concludes your fantasy update. Obviously, we have a lot to talk about with the Twins, but first we're going to take a brief look at the Wild. Currently, they are third in the conference, not by much over the Avs. At 25-16-4, they were on a bit of a hot streak, but it's cooled a bit. They've lost two in a row. Is that right?
Sounds right. Yeah, they're on an East Coast. They're on an East Southeast road trip, which is pretty tough because they're playing really good. I mean, they lost to Carolina and they lost to Florida, and those are two really good teams, and they're both, you know, on the road. So
yeah, it's a tough assignment. Real quick, what's the overall tenor of the year been like? It sounds like, you know, like I said, they're third in the conference. They've been playing decently.
I think it's a pretty standard, solid Minnesota Wild season. I don't think they feel quite as good of a team as they were last year. I don't know. I mean, there's no real reason for that other than they're just probably had some guys playing over their heads last year, like Ryan Hartman, who has definitely been much worse and or hurt most of this year. But I think they're still they've been solidly in third place in the division for quite a while now, I think. And they haven't really been able to get in range of, like, within a couple points worth of the top two teams, but they've also been mostly holding off the Avs and the Blues and the Predators behind them. With the Avs, you never know. They can always make a run and overtake you. So that's like the Blues have been really bad a lot of this year. So I'm not real confident in them. But Colorado can certainly, if they get fully healthy and they get hot, they can overtake anybody. So it's a tenuous position. It's a solid position, but it's a tenuous position.
They are certainly getting hot. So we got Minnesota at 54 points, and Colorado's crept up with 53. They've won five in a row. So you're saying, they'll creep up on you.
Yep.
And both Dallas and Winnipeg are tied for 1 and 2 at 63 points. So like you said, those guys are kind of up ahead a bit.
Right. I think there's been good and bad pretty much all through the lineup. The goaltending has had a really pleasant surprise, and Philip Gustafson, he's been really good and better than most people expected, I think.
Fleury is not having the greatest year, if I remember
right. I think Fleury, I mean, maybe he could be cooked, you know, he is kind of old, but
yeah.
he probably hasn't been quite as good as you would have hoped for when you bet on him. But Gustafson probably has made up for that himself anyway. Kaprizov is still Kaprizov. We still have number one center Sam Steele and other number one center Freddie Gaudreau holding down the top two line middle positions. So, you know, the traditional Minnesota Wild, who do they actually have that's good at playing center? Question mark is still a question mark. But Joel Eriksson Ek is still the best checking line center in hockey. So that kind of makes up for it too. I mean, you know, it's I'm not really too up or down on them right now because they're about where I would expect, and they're pretty good without probably being a real serious threat to be a major playoff player. But you never know; they could go on a run and surprise us all.
I was gonna say it's sounding like your standard first, maybe second round exit. You know.
Yeah, I mean, they could be. I mean, you know, if they get matched up with Winnipeg, I think they could give Winnipeg a series. And then you never know what could happen. You know, the risk will be if they do lose out position wise to the Avalanche and they end up playing, like, I think they'd probably be in worse shape against Dallas than Winnipeg. Or maybe if they end up playing Vegas again, they might be in bad shape against Vegas, you know. So I think one of those matchups would be tougher.
Oh, you know, I oh my goodness, I screwed it up. I was looking at division. Are they still third in the conference?
Probably not.
Oh, no, Minnesota was 7 in the conference. Okay, yeah. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. Sorry if I made a mistake earlier on that.
I usually look at division anyway because that is what the trends are, matchups. So
I'll go in and dub in division over every time I said conference.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll wait till DG can join us again for a more thorough analysis. Oh, go ahead.
They did do something real exciting. I think you were going to mention it.
I was just about to say if you had any quick thoughts on the 7x7 contract for a young Mr. Boldy.
I think that's 100% probably the most exciting thing that's happened so far this year. Besides the dual things, and DG would have probably a better perspective on this than I do. But they do have, again, goalie looks pretty good going forward because Gustafson has been good and Jesper Wallstedt has been fantastic.
I was about to say, Wallstedt's been hitting some milestones
in the minors recently. Yeah.
So those two
things look real promising. And then, the Boldy contract is a very, very exciting extension to secure. It will affect some people's places probably on the roster going into either this trade deadline or this summer. There will be more. I mean, like we saw with Kevin Fiala last summer, who was probably a choice you had to make based on several of the other guys who they had given extensions to.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to affect people in the next round of roster pruning because of how tight against the cap the Wild are going
to
be.
You don't have to, you know, we have to get too deep into the specifics, but for, you know, the lesser hockey knowers, I know, you know, after the last recent agreement, I don't understand as well how hockey salaries are relative to like baseball and, you know, football, et cetera. So how big of a hit does like the cap take, or however, whatever terminology you want to use?
Well, I mean, and DG knows this better than I do. Also,
in vague terms.
Yeah. I mean, there's an effect both on in terms of the absolute amount of money you dole out. And then there are also effects in like a relative sense, like, If you have,
I guess my question is like relative to other contracts in the NHL, like how is this a big contract? Is it like, it's like, you know, decent for the.
Yeah, no, it's the latter. Yeah. I would say I mean, in terms of the value for the player, it's not like this is an overpay or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually think it's probably a good deal for the organization.
It's kind of like in baseball, like, you know, buying out some of those early years, basically, right?
Kind of, yeah. It's probably, I would call it equivalent to that, yeah, in a lot of ways, yeah.
All right, well, we'll try to get DG with us and delve a bit deeper into the Wild. Let's turn our attention to the Twins. Obviously, there are some big transactions we have to talk about. So let's jump in that big one, or into the big one. The Paddock extension. Sorry.
That's it. That's what I was thinking of. Oh, I was going to say the AJ Alexi trade.
Oof, yeah, that's a big one too. Actually, let's do get to the Paddock one, but let us start with the Luis Arias trade. I know a lot of people are upset, especially the ones who are, you know, I'm not saying this in a disparaging way, but, you know, the ones who are more for, you know, they're more for the entertainment value of the team.
Yeah.
And I can certainly see that. I mean, he was probably my, you know, one of my favorite players on the team, especially when your favorite La Tortuga left us.
Yeah, and the difference is Arias is actually a good baseball
player. I know. Anyway, it is a big hit. It is a big hit. So why don't we just start with your straight up opinion of it?
I mean, I'm like a lot of people, I think. I mean, I have two opinions on it. One is I'm really, really going to miss him as much as anyone, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, because I enjoy watching him play baseball.
He's a baseball freak. He's a freak.
He's a fun guy to watch play baseball. Yeah. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
But as a baseball trade, as a trade, I like it. It's a good trade.
That's kind of where I'm falling down. Like, it sucks, but so far it's a cushy fall for now.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as this season goes, it could go either way.
Right. Like, right. Of course.
A lot of it really depends on, I mean, it just depends on who ends up having a better season between Arias and Pablo Lopez. Mm-hmm. Right. If Arias is another, it wins a batting title again and plays 144 games again, then, and Pablo Lopez has shoulder problems all year, then it's a for this season, right?
For the season, right.
But in terms of cashing in Arias's value, you couldn't have done better than this. I don't.
I was about to say it's. I mean, unless he goes off on another crazy run, like this is seems like peak value time.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine him doing any better than he did this past season. He could he could repeat it.
Right.
He could certainly do it again. But do you ever really see Arias adding enough power to get to, like, you know, 15 plus home runs in a season? Probably not. Do you ever see him being better defensively at any position other than first base than he already is now? Probably not. Right. And he's not going to get any faster, right?
Yeah.
So all of those aspects are, he's maxed out the amount of projectable value you can imagine for it. He could do it again. He could he could have more years like 2022. It's really hard to imagine him doing any better than that.
Yeah, and the injuries are starting to creep in, and he had a healthier 2022 than 2021, but that's a concern, right? Obviously,
there's so many guys on this roster obviously who have injury concerns, but he was another one.
Tell me about it.
He has knees that are very old. They're not old, but they are like they're old.
It's kind of a Kubel conundrum.
Yeah, and again, he's not for a guy who hits singles. He's not fast. He doesn't play any position well except for first base.
And he's not the kind of player type you would normally put at first base, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think when you construct your lineup, I think Twins could live with it because they get at more power than average from center field and shortstop.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. But normally you would want a guy with more power at first base because probably would, most teams would get
the
less
more,
power.
The more prototypical type of first baseman. And the Twins have a lot of people that they would probably want to give innings to there next year as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big year for Alex Kirilloff.
Right.
And they traded Urshela in September or October, whenever it was, November, so they could open up third base for Jose Miranda. So I think that I would be very surprised if the 1A plan at first base isn't Alex Kirilloff.
If he can stay healthy.
If he can stay. And if he can't, then the backup plan is probably Joey Gallo.
Yep. Yeah, I suppose. And we'll see if he's got a place in right field if Kepler sticks around or not.
Right. If Kepler gets traded, then Gallo might probably is your frontline right fielder.
Right. Yeah. That would be my guess. Real quick, I thought maybe we could get to it later, but let's talk about it super quick. Do you see Kepler getting traded? I mean,
I don't.
And if there is a trade, is it more the Twins just kind of getting what they can?
Yeah, I mean, see, trading Kepler right now is certainly was very different from trading Luis Arias right now.
Right.
Because would not be cashing in maximum value. So for that reason, I would be pretty not surprised. I would be pretty not surprised if he doesn't get traded yet or at all. They might just not pick up his option or whatever. I gotta double check, but I think he's only got one more guaranteed year left right now. Hmm. And I think he has an option with some structure on it for maybe the next year or even 2 years.
I mean, that could maybe be a little more attractive on the trade market, but yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, because you're right. I think you're 100% right that if they did trade him now, it'd just be to move him out and clear playing time and space for other people, because they won't get great value for him in a trade.
Anyway, going back to this main trade, how about real quick, we, go through the spoils a little bit. I don't want to say what can we expect, but what is Pablo Lopez bringing to the table?
I would say he's another, suddenly he's got another good, solid starting pitcher with as good of a track record as anybody they have right now of pitching a bulk amount of innings. Mm. You know, I think he hit, I think he hit 180 innings last year, which is considerably more. I mean, you dub that in if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty confident he pitched more innings than any Twin starter did last year. I'll say that.
A low bar, but yeah, okay.
So, you know, he's got an okay fastball and a really good changeup, so he's got a pretty good arsenal to go against either side of the plate.
I think I saw somewhere that he said he modeled his changeup off of Johan Santana. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah,
that'll make Twins fans happy.
Yeah. You know, and everybody, all the people from Miami say he's a really, really good dude.
I've seen that, yeah.
And so I think emotionally, I think it's not uncomparable, the reaction to moving Pablo Lopez for them as it is for us moving Luis Arraez. But yeah, he's a guy, I think he's had a ERA around in the threes for the last three seasons. And I've looked at him for a while as a guy that I wouldn't mind targeting, as soon as we kind of realized around baseball that the Marlins were going to move some of their pitching excess.
As they are wont to do.
Right.
Let's see, the last three seasons, starting with the most recent, 375, 307, 361.
Yeah.
And also real quick, innings pitch winner for the Twins was Joe Ryan at 147.
Right. I mean, Pablo definitely pitched more than that last year.
He pitched 180.
Okay. So I was correct.
Yep. Well done.
So yeah, I mean, I think you can picture a rotation. I think we would talk about this anyway, but I think you can picture a rotation that has you can at least enter the season with no major question marks other than how much you can get from Kenta Maeda right away.
Right.
But you've got four spots that are pretty solid, and you've also got depth that can fill in when those guys need downtime or breaks or whatever.
Inevitably need downtime or breaks.
Right. You know, Sonny Gray, Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan, Tyler Mahle, and Kenta Maeda, plus Bailey Ober, plus Josh Winder, plus Louis Varland, plus Simeon Woods Richardson, even maybe. I think you've got a lot more coverage there now than you had going into last year, when we were pretty much like, well, we got Dylan Bundy and Chris Archer, and they'll take two of the spots, right?
Sorry, off topic real quick. With this amount of depth, do you think they're going to do anything non-traditional with the starting core this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I think it's possible. I think Falvey said the other day, you know, they intend to plan for a 5-man rotation, but he's not. But he also said, we've thought about 6-man rotations also. So my opinion is, you know, we'll see if everybody gets through spring training first. Yeah, yeah. I'd be pretty shocked if Bailey Ober isn't on the opening day roster, regardless of whether he's in the. The only way I wouldn't expect him to be is if he's on the injured list.
Yeah.
But I'd expect him to be on the opening day roster, even if he isn't in the rotation, because I think even if everything goes as good as planned, I don't know how much you get from Kenta in terms of, like, I don't think he's going to be out there starting 7-inning games in April, throwing 120 pitches.
Even if you did start with something non-traditional, I have a feeling we get mowed down to a standard 5-man rotation pretty quick.
Right. That's absolutely likely. Yeah.
All right. And speaking of, why don't we wait till we can get Nibish on board for, you know, some more thorough looks into the 2023 Twins. For now, why don't we stick to the Luis Arraez trade? And let's look at some of the other pieces of it. Jose Salas.
Yeah, he was, I believe, a top five maybe number four by either MLB Pipeline or Baseball America prospect in the Marlins system. I think he's 19 years old, shortstop prospect who projects as a decent all-around hitter and at least has a chance to stick as a shortstop at this point in his career. So he's a good, I mean, in my opinion, it's a good prospect to get. I don't think he ranks as highly in our system right now because I think we have a little bit more what I would call upper mid-range depth than the Marlins did, but he was one of their better or best hitting prospects that they had. So I think getting that in addition to Pablo Lopez is again a really good value add for our side of the deal. I think it helps soften the blow of trading a guy who plays in the infield, and it also kind of gives us a little more flexibility for continuing to trade from the infield in the either whether it's this year or next year, like because we have I think a pretty good stock of infield prospects still, even with some of the trades we've made in the last couple of years.
Right.
So yeah, he's a good ad. The other guy, I believe it's Brian Churio.
Yeah, Churio. Yeah.
Churio. He's kind of a lottery ticket. I think he's also about a teenager who has, I think the highest level he's played in is a Dominican Summer League.
I think he's still 17, it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of just a throw in. So we'll see what happens with him. It's an extra piece. It doesn't really mean, it's one of those that doesn't mean too much to me right now, but it's not bad to get even more pieces.
Well, I was going to say on the whole, like you said, Twins fans are obviously sad to lose Luis, but Marlins fans also would be sad to lose Lopez. But, you know, some bloggers out there were particularly upset with the imbalance of the trade, thinking that this was a bit of an overpay for Arias.
On the Marlins side, I frankly was surprised. I actually didn't think a trade was going to happen when the reports came out that it seemed like the Twins kind of were positioning publicly that they weren't going to do a one-for-one trade. And I didn't think that Arise actually had had this much trade value, to be honest. I honestly wouldn't disagree that it is probably a bit of an overpay from the Marlins perspective, but apparently the Twins got them to blink and they really wanted him, which, you know, is fair. I mean, it's fair because he's a good player, and like if you value the things that he's really good at overall over the total package of what he is as a player, then it's understandable. Like if what you really need is more the extra contact ability and what he brings to the table specifically, then it's understandable that you might value that more than what his generalized total package as a player would theoretically bring you.
Actually, okay, real quick, there's a couple of things I want to hit on before we go, but thinking about it, how much longer is he under control? Was this his last year of arbitration?
I think he has 2 years after this one.
Oh, after this one. Okay.
Yeah, I think he has 3 years total left.
Okay.
Because he's a super two player.
Because I'm wondering, like, you know, they paid a big price for it, but what are the Marlins going to do with that is my question. Like, do they have some plan here? Like,
what they've said is they're planning to play him at second base.
Well, no, I don't mean that, but like kind of long-term plan. Are they trying to make a run for something? Because that's a big price for a piece. If you're just going to be a middling team for the next 3 years, what's the point? I mean, he gets to hang out in Miami, so good for him. But I'm not sure what the Marlins are getting out of this.
I don't know. I do think it's a little questionable from their perspective. I think I saw somebody say, you know, the Marlins did nothing all offseason until they traded Pablo Lopez and Jose Salas for this.
Well, and the Marlins style, like, you know, other, you know, quote unquote small market teams, is, you know, to trade that big player for prospects. This kind of is like the reverse of that, it seems, which again doesn't make sense, but okay, whatever. We don't have too much time left.
I mean, I'm not really sure. It doesn't really change the direction much, and it's hard to imagine in a year or two from now, if they trade Arise before he hits free agency, it's hard to imagine them recouping
this amount of value. Yeah, exactly. Like I said, this could be peak value. Real quick, just I want to spend a couple minutes on the Paddock extension.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's not you know, a huge hot piece of news, but what you know, he's injured at through how long? Through midseason at least, right?
He'll probably, I think he has a chance to pitch near the end of the season.
Okay.
I think he had his surgery at the end of May 2022. So he'll probably, yeah, I, you know, I mean, again, this stuff is always fluid with people's rehabs, but I think he would, I think they're targeting him being able to pitch whatever extent that, that means probably by August or September of this year. Yeah.
On the whole, just the, is this kind of a decent bit of insurance, a little bit of an overpay or?
I don't think it's an overpay. I don't, because I think they added what they gave him, like, $2.5 million for 2 years and then $7.5 million for a third year, which right, is the only, I mean, I think he was under control this year and next year. So they got one more year on him, and it's not, it's, it, I think it's, if you remember a few years ago when they did a deal for Michael Pineda, when he was coming off, he was a free agent
and had
Tommy John surgery.
Yeah. They knew he was going to be out the whole year and they still,
Right. They gave him a free, basically a free year for him, and then had him the year after that, and he was pretty good, and then they got him on another cheap deal the year after that. I think it's a good, I think it's a good structure. I mean, and it certainly is good to have another, a guy locked down for the season after this one and the year after this one, after that one, because they do have three of the guys who are currently in the rotation are probably good, are going to be free agents after this year. Sonny Gray, Tyler Mahle, and Kenta are all slated for free agency. So I'm not in love with Paddock as a pitcher. I wasn't when they traded him for him in the first place, but it's a, it's pretty low risk to give this structure contract for a guy for, you know, just a couple years after this one. And there, and it's, and again, $2.5 million over the course of the first 2 years is basically is, is very little in this.
Yeah. No, it makes, makes sense to me. I agree. It's just, you know, it's a common sense, like, all right, let's, So anyway, we should get along to, oh, wait, what's that? It's Nibbish. How are you?
It's Nibbish.
Again, I don't know how many times, like I said, you guys, they can't see you waving every time.
It's just, I mean,
say hi.
That was for your benefit.
That is appreciated. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. I'm here to I'm here to discuss all the vagaries of the AJ Alexi debacle here. we are gonna really pick this one apart.
I believe Dan tried to bring that up.
We did drop. I did drop AJ Alexi in the earlier portion of this podcast.
So anyway, there's actually, you know, real news we have to discuss, which is the Twins possibly pulling off another good trade. Why don't we break into this further? The news on the wire, the hot wire, the third rail, whatever, is that the Twins have acquired Michael A. Taylor from the Royals. And just to, you know, be completist about it, the Royals acquired Evan Sisk and Steven Cruz. Let's start with Michael A. Taylor.
He's a center fielder, really, really good.
A slight upgrade from Jake Cave.
He's better than
Celestino.
Yeah, he's a better player than Jake Cave or Gilberto Celestino.
All right, all right. For those of us who are less familiar, where's the sarcasm level? But
no, this is not sarcastic.
I mean, he is legitimately better than Jake Cave and Gilberto Celestino put together.
That might be there a little sarcastic.
There we go. That's what I'm going for.
If you put Gilberto on Jake Cave's shoulders and put them in a trench coat,
I'm not sure how good a player that would actually be.
Michael A. Taylor would definitely
Michael
be better
A. Taylor
than
would be better than them.
Yeah, he's an upgrade of what the roster has in that extra center fielder slot for sure.
I mean, legitimately, he turns into one of the best fourth outfielders in baseball.
Right.
If you want to think of it, if you want to think of it that way, I mean, honestly, he's more of a third and a half outfielder because he's going to get a lot of playing time. It's not like your traditional fourth outfielder where you're going to get like 70 games. He's going to play triple digit games.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, especially with the Twins, I mean, you know, there seems to be a, you know, whirlwind going through each position in any day, giving whatever the situation is with the roster. It seems like he's going to get a lot of playing time was my question.
Well, I mean, in theory, our fourth outfielder last year would have been Celestino, and he ended up actually playing more than any other outfielder on the team. Yeah, so, right. I mean, yeah. But yeah, there will be ample playing time, and that's why one of the big reasons why it's so important to have a good fourth outfielder, and Taylor fills that need very, very well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you look at his defensive stats, he's rated as the best defensive center fielder in baseball for at least the last couple seasons. I think maybe even going past that back, he's been one of the top ones. But certainly, I think he leads the league in defensive runs saved at center field for the last 2 years. And he's right-handed, so he fits a niche that this roster needed a little more balance. In the outfield mix of in terms of handedness, because other than Buxton and Celestino, they are a little overloaded with lefties. So Taylor helps balance that out too. And yeah, every day that Buxton is DHing or isn't playing, then Taylor will be in center field, and we won't have any defensive drop off. Offensively, you don't really want to rely on him too much as a offensive focal point, but he's got at least as much on base skills as you get out of Celestino with considerably a little more power potential. So he'll still be an upgrade from that too. It raises the level, like you said, it really raises the floor of what the Twins outfield mix is going to be, I think. And it gives you flexibility. Like we I think in our earlier segment we were talking about if we still expected Max Kepler or someone else from the outfield to get traded away. And I and what I said before, I still feel, which is that in a vacuum, you're not going to get the kind of value maximization, maximization on a Kepler trade right now.
Maximization, yes.
To that point,
Yeah.
I honestly, at this point, I'm hoping they don't trade Kepler because I don't think you're going to get proper value for him. I don't think
Right.
you're going to get what you actually need to be getting if you're trading away a perfectly competent hitter with plus fielding that you have in Kepler. I don't feel that now is the time to be trading Kepler.
Actually, remind me again, what is the remains of his contract?
Yeah, I checked. I checked since the last time we were speaking. Yeah,
That
he has this
was we were
year.
just speaking a couple of minutes ago, just in
That's
case.
right. And I
Yes,
just
yes,
checked
yes.
in that
Okay.
time.
Yep. Oh, yep. Very
He has
efficient.
this year left guaranteed at about at I think 8.25 million
That's fine.
for 2023. He has a
Nice.
team option on 2024 for 10 million or a $1 million buyout.
But I mean,
Wow.
if he continues to be a two-win player,
Yeah,
right?
that's what I was about to
I
say.
mean, it's not outlandish that they would just keep him on the team.
As we were just discussing a couple minutes ago, it seems like we got some, a high value for Arias.
Right.
So if the Twins could somehow, if they could get a high value for him, take it, right?
100%. I don't think that is necessarily the concern. You definitely take it if somebody's willing to give you value for them. The only other side of it is if you don't want to end up putting too much onto Larnach and Kirilloff and Miranda. At present, honestly, at least two of those three have to succeed. If you trade away Kepler, you're putting yourself closer to the position where all three of those have to succeed.
Right. If you get high or equal value for what you value Kepler as, then you could do the deal. But you then
Definitely.
I don't think they're in a position where they have to trade him. You know what I mean? Like you don't have to trade him just to trade him. They didn't have to trade Arias just to trade Arias either. But they got maximal value out of trading Arias, and I don't think they're in a position with their outfield right now either, because like Nimish said, they don't they really still have they having Kepler around does take the pressure off of all of those other guys who are still kind of either needing to take a next step like Miranda or needing to really reestablish themselves like Larnach or Kirilloff. It does take a little bit of pressure off of that mix of guys that you would kind of add on if you don't have a guy like Kepler around. And then again, if Kepler does well for the first part of the season, if all those other guys do well enough, or if other people get into the mix later on, like a Matt Wallner or a Royce Lewis, even if he comes back reasonably healthy and they decide they want to try him in the outfield again, then you could then at the trade deadline you could still look at making a move with someone like Kepler in a kind of the non-traditional trade deadline type of spot where you're not really buying or selling. You're just like what they did with the Rise. You're just kind of trading need for need. And if Kepler does well enough to rebuild some of his value in that way, that someone else would want to give you a little more for him in July, then you're probably in a better spot to do it then than you would be now.
Kepler's not really blocking anybody at this point, though, right?
No, he's supplementing them, in my opinion. I mean, yeah. He's yeah. strengthening the fact that they don't all need to come up and immediately be 2 to 3 win players.
Right.
Right.
I mean, they can come up and be decent or somewhat replacement level, and it doesn't detriment the team, and they can show a little bit of patience with them in the meantime without having to worry about that potentially losing games for them.
Right.
Because Kepler is still a good player. Which I think that has been lost kind of in the last few seasons, is that it's not like Kepler is pulling a Danny Santana or a Rondell White or something and becoming this black hole of awfulness after showing initial promise. He's maybe not quite what we were hoping he would be this far into his career, but he's still a two-win player. That has a lot of value.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And I think some people perhaps have overstated it. I don't think many have, but with the rule changes, with, you know, the shift and such next year, you know, he'll get a marginal bump up in offensive stats as well, one would think.
Well, I mean, I don't know how much, but it'll be interesting to see, because he certainly is one of the most shifted players. Right. Or he was, you know,
they only have to keep two people on each side of the base. Right. So, I mean, they're still going to have the shortstop like 2 inches to the right of second base every time he comes up, and they're going to be playing the second baseman in right field. So I'm skeptical.
Now I'm overstating it. It's not going to make much of a difference. No.
I feel like it'll tick up a little bit, but I mean, I think that anyone who's looking for his batting average to go up 20 points is not going to be super enthused. Though, as the team has recently shown, batting average is not the end all be all.
Right.
Well, let's hope.
that's the bet we're making anyway. Yeah.
I think it's a good bet.
Let's go back to the recent trade.
Right.
So again, Michael A. Taylor, that sounds great. It sounds like we have parted with Evan Sisk and Steven Cruz.
I don't know anything about Cruz. There wasn't a whole lot of, I mean, honestly, if Seth Stroh is talking about how they didn't give up much, then I mean.
The report a few days ago was that the Royals had asked for Josh Winder for Michael A. Taylor, and the Twins said, no way.
Like a major league ready starting pitching prospect, and instead they got him down to a triple A reliever, and I guess I don't know a lot about Sanchez.
It's Cruz.
Cruz, there we go.
He's a double A reliever.
Okay,
they both average about five walks per 9 innings.
Yeah, so they got next to nothing for him then.
All right, so, okay, Nibish, you walked in moments after we were speaking about it, but we were saying that, you know, the Twins seem to have quite favorably come out on the better end of the Arias trade. This sounds like a similar verdict, would you say?
Well, it's funny because, you know, there was consternation everywhere all off season about how nothing was happening, and I mean, free agents flying off the board, and we're not doing anything to get the team better, and suddenly we get the one big piece, and suddenly they're like, all right, we're just going to start winning some trades now.
I'm just saying, I feel like that's kind of what's happening, and it makes me worry.
It makes me worry that I'm going to get too excited about them,
right,
the idea
right,
that they're
right,
going to
right.
win 90, 95 games.
Because, right. you know, I right. feel, you know, about a year ago, we had some pretty optimistic podcasts at the same time as well.
I don't think we were wrong to be optimistic, though. I mean,
they had a good roster last year. It's just that they all were.
They had, and honestly, they have the same potential pitfall this year that they did last year. I trust that they know that this is a problem, but they really need to figure out the bullpen. The bullpen could be a problem.
Well, I mean, I think the bullpen is in pretty good shape, right? You got Duran. He's good.
Yeah. Yep.
You got Griffin Jacks. He's good.
Yes.
You got Caleb Thielbar. He's good.
Caleb Thielbar is somehow like one of the best relievers in baseball.
You got
I don't understand how that's possible, but
you got Jorge Lopez. They got to fix him, but if they can fix him, he's good.
I think he'll be better this year, but
I think so too. I mean, I think he'll be better this year, yeah. Or at least, you know, somewhere in between where what he was doing with Baltimore and what he was doing with the Twins, I think is, you know.
Right. I mean, they got Pagan. He's a pitcher.
I mean, right.
Throws
he's
baseballs.
Gonna, he'll bounce back.
Or they'll flip him for something real good.
They got Trevor Bagill. He throws 100 mile an hour straight ball.
Yeah, he's the old Todd Van Poppel of the group.
They got Jorge Alcala coming back off of his whatever his injury was.
I kind of forgot about Alcala.
I mean, he's the X factor, right? If he can go, then that really I think obviates the need for adding anybody else significant to the bullpen right now.
I think they need to do one more because I'm not sold on their depth. It all looks well and good, and then you get a couple of months down the season, and three of your relievers are sitting on the injured list,
right?
And you're throwing. God, I'd have to even look to see who they were throwing out
there last. Ian Hamilton.
You're talking
Tyler Thornburg.
Tyler Thornburg. Let's see. We got
is that even a real person?
We got Chichi. We got the legend of Chichi Gonzalez.
What are you talking about? Well, starting pitch, Aaron Sanchez.
You got a whole bunch of innings for Yennier Cano.
Oh boy.
It just it sounds good, but then you've suddenly bottom line, if they have injuries like they did last year, no team can survive having to throw 38 pitchers out there. There's just no real way to do that. But I would like to see them get one more. It doesn't have to be a high leverage guy, just a guy who is a decent reliever who can eat some innings. Because that's what we ended up having a lot of problems with last year, is that all those innings were getting eaten by the Canoes and the Manaias and the
Tyler Thornburg.
Occasionally Nick Gordon.
Tyler,
distressingly
Tyler
often
Thornburg.
Nick Gordon. But yes, Tyler Thornburg.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful time.
I mean, that's what they kind of, I mean, they've been doing that thing with guys like Oliver Ortega and AJ Alexi, who they may or may not be able to pass through waivers on Alexi. They already did with Ortega, but they've been doing their usual, you know, trawling off the scrap
dashing.
Heap. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing who we can grab for cheap and throw.
And I mean, everybody gets heartburn over that, but that's what all teams do. They stash
right.
Everyone they possibly can and see, hey, we're going to jam about 15 people into that 13th spot and see who is halfway decent.
Right.
I mean, the Dodgers do that. Everybody does that.
Right. And the vast majority of them aren't halfway decent, but that's, you just kind of
no,
roll them out there.
15 aren't even halfway decent.
Roll them out there and see what happens.
It kind of seems like we're going to do that same thing with the Twins starters this year, though, right? Just kind of cram them in and see how it goes, right?
I mean, we've got four. I mean, if you consider a modern day rotation to be five people, we've got four absolute locks. I mean, I don't like numbering the pitchers, but our third and fourth pitchers, I mean, Lopez and Ryan, your fourth best pitcher is Joe Ryan, and you're doing better than just about anybody. The fifth,
it still kind of seems more like a quantity than quality. And I don't mean quantity in that way. I mean, like a high stock of like your two to fours, basically, right?
Yeah, that's
yeah. But I mean, there's like six ace pitchers out there.
Right. It's like,
and they're spoken for, and they're making $50 million this year.
Justin Verlander, there's only one of him. Of course, he's on the same team as Max Scherzer, who there's only one of him too. But besides that,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think we get hung up on aces too often. In that, you know, you think back to the 2001 World Series, and yeah, Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling, they took on all comers. But way, 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 way more often, it's the team with four really, really good starters that just kind of makes it happen.
I mean, let's hope a lightning bolt strikes. What do they call it now? American Family Field, and that falls on Willy Adames or something, and also takes out Christian Yelich, and the Brewers just have an awful first half of the season. And we can talk them into giving us Brandon Woodruff in July for, like, you know, Brooks Lee and Austin Martin or something like that. That's our best bet.
And I think that's something we're going to have to get into in a future podcast. Yeah, let's not get too speculative at the moment.
Our starting pitching depth is honestly, I think, in a good spot. I mean, you got four very good, very, very good pitchers. If Maeda comes back even halfway decent, very good. You got Ober. He's already proven himself on a big league level. You've got a whole bunch of people who haven't proven themselves on a big league level. If even one of them turns out to be even half the pitcher that all the prospect hounds drool over, then you got six pitchers. That's fantastic. Everybody can always talk about how, oh yeah, we have quantity over quality. You need an ace. You need this, that.
It's good quantity, though.
The Angels have Ohtani. How are they doing?
Well, there's several other factors that play into that. But yes, your point remains. Okay, we're going to have to lock things up quick. So while we have a few minutes left, why don't we take a look at some recent videos. DK, why don't you go first?
I don't remember. It's been so long since we did this. If I suggested the Soccer Mommy video from last summer already on a podcast, then forget about that.
I feel like you did.
If I didn't, then I suggest that one. She played, her new record had a song called Shotgun on it. It was really good.
I believe that song showed up on the Summer Mix.
Did it? If it did, that's even better. Because I definitely didn't play it when we were doing Summer Mix videos. Because I already played it.
Yeah.
But I don't remember if I said it on a podcast. If I did already say it on the podcast, then my recommendation is Father John Misty's Buddy's Rendezvous. Because it's so smooth.
That I am not shocked at this selection. Okay, thanks, DK. Nibish, what you got?
I'm going to be the most boring indie person ever and just say that I really like the Radiohead song.
I was thinking about a mention of that. Yeah. I went back and I listened to that whole album after.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I'm boring and obvious, and OK Computer is probably my favorite album ever. So, yep. So let down, it works.
And I think we had a brief text about that too. I was like, right. I don't know, Exit Music might be the best, and Letdown is right after that, I believe, right?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, yeah, Exit. You listen to Exit Music and you're like, wow, this is really good, nothing could top this, and then you get the Letdown and you're like, oh my god, it topped it. Or at least that's what I do. Yeah,
that was basically the series of text I gave you, because it was in real time.
Yeah.
When I said it, I was like, Exit Music's great, guys. And then I was like, oh, wait, Letdown's next. Oh, man. Okay. I might have to rethink this. Yes. Okay. No, you are not basic. At least, if you are, I am too.
I'm
weird.
I mean, I think we're both reasonably basic, but it's an incredible album.
Summer Mix came out in December because, you know, it happens. But anyway, please, you know, in these cold, chilly, winter, snowy months, go ahead and get a burst of summer. The Summer Mix is still available on this here podcast feed. If you're listening to this here podcast, you just have to take a hop, skip, and a jump over, and you can listen to the Summer Mix. There's lots of great tunes on that. I highly recommend it. It turned out pretty well, and I say that every year. And actually, we're going to close things down here, and I want to wish a happy and prosperous Year of the Rabbit to you all. We are recording this on the Lunar New Year. And unfortunately, we've had to play far too many RIP tracks lately. And recently, we had to play one for Terry Hall of the Specials. And to take us out, here is Enjoy Yourself, It's Later Than You Think. And we'll see you next time, guys, for another installment of the World's Greatest Online Magazine Presents the Half Baked Podcast.
Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. Enjoy yourself while you're still in the pink. The years go by as quickly as you wink. Enjoy yourself, enjoy yourself. It's later than you think.
Fun. It's good to be wise when you're young, 'cause you can only be young but for once. Enjoy yourself and have lots of fun. Take that and live, my friend, and it will never learn. Everybody, enjoy.
Yeah! Cha-ching!